The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon. Are you ready for Double Time with Double D? Go behind the scenes of the NFL and the game with Dave Duerson. We want to hear your words, too. Don't be afraid to speak up. Now, here's your host, Dave Duerson, Double D.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Double Time with Double D. I'm your host, Dave Duerson. It's been a couple of weeks since we've had opportunity to get together and have conversation, and I have been traveling for quite some time with NFL meetings out in Phoenix and some business meetings last week in Las Vegas that got in the way of our Thursday afternoon dialogue. But I'm so excited to be back with you guys today. And we've got a number of things to discuss. But let me just ask you guys a question to begin with. Have you ever been in one of those situations where you felt like you had absolutely no control, whether it was at home or on the job, but that someone else was pulling all the strings and you felt like a puppet? Well, that's what we want to discuss today. In fact, our topic for today is what in the football, as in what in the hell, was the NFL thinking? But more importantly, we want to educate you guys as to what's been going on in the world of the National Football League. A number of things have occurred over the last 7 days or so. And so we're going to go behind the scenes. I'm going to be giving you guys some detailed information of the things that I've been participating in, the dialogues that I've been having with NFL executives, particularly on the Players Association side, and a number of my colleagues. But more importantly, we want to get right into our discussion in regards to the Supreme Court decision that was just handed down on Tuesday, which is called American Needle Incorporated versus the National Football League. And that was an antitrust law case that a Chicago suburban textile company brought against the NFL. Now, the history behind this thing is that the NFL in 2000 signed an exclusive agreement with Reebok, a 10-year agreement with Reebok for all apparel. That means every hat, jersey, T-shirt, towel, sock, whatever that you've seen over the last 10 years. All of that product has been produced by one manufacturer, one company, Reebok. And American Needle sued in antitrust based on the Sherman Antitrust Act, which basically states that there are no monopolies that can exist in America except there be exceptions granted by the federal government, of which the NFL has been granted one, but only as it pertains to the competitive nature of the sport itself. But because those 32 teams have to work in unison, they attempted to go above and beyond and actually went to the court and asked the court to say that the NFL is above the law. The NFL is, quote, unquote, above the law. And the response that came back was, well, fellas, this is antitrust and there are triple damages. So that's going to mean some serious big money to American Needle. We went through this as players ourselves back in 1987 when we struck. And then you may remember we played for 6 years without a collective bargaining agreement, settling the case in Minneapolis in federal court under Special Magistrate Judge David Doty, who had informed the NFL that he would, in fact, rule on the Reggie White versus the NFL case in favor of the players, if need be, and that he highly recommended that we reach settlement. So since 1993 until now, we've had labor peace. Many additional negotiations have taken place as it pertains to the collective bargaining agreement. Many additions have been made. But for the first time, we've heard the NFL owners talk in terms of a threatened lockout And I believe that they were expecting to have victory in the court of in the Supreme Court case of American Needle versus the NFL, which would have allowed the NFL then to go back and attempt to undo what was done in Minneapolis, where the players received free agency as a result. I was one of the plaintiffs who sued for free agency. There were five total class actions. One was for preseason pay. We had to sue for everything in the individual player contract. So I sued the Bears, Dave Dorson versus the Chicago Bears, on behalf of all 1,600 players in the league. Now, what that means is that in the individual player contract that we sign, 10% of your salary is due to you during the course of the preseason. But when you have a bargaining agent, as we did, the Players Association, the collective bargaining agreement supersedes the individual player contract that we sign. Therefore, we were only receiving a small per diem and a small game check for those preseason games versus 10% of our salary. So as a result, again, of all of those things, triple damages were going to be awarded, which at the time the league was generating about $1.5 billion in revenue. In today's game, it's $8 billion. And again, the reason that the NFL chose to go to war with the American Needle was because of the fact that the NFL is projecting that in 2015, that club-generated revenues will exceed $25 billion. And as we've had this discussion many times before, you're talking about the players receiving, in essence, 51% of all revenue. There's a total revenue number that says that the players are receiving 60%, but the NFL has a creative way of doing their books. And so when those are adjusted, the players are receiving 51% of total revenue. Our phone lines are open, 888-346-9144. We want to hear from you. Want to get your thoughts. We've got a number of guests who are going to be calling in, discussing some things with us. But I want to move on while we wait for our first guest to call in to discuss what has occurred as a result of this announcement. Immediately, we heard from the NFL as they were in their late spring meetings down in Dallas that the next Super Bowl 48, the next one to be awarded, will be going into the New York, New Jersey area. I'm very excited about that for the Mara family, a tremendously class family, Wellington Mara, who was the one of the pioneers along with George Halas in forming the National Football League way back in 1921. Mr. Mara was the very first person I met when I got to Giant Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey, back in 1990. As I got out of my car and walked into the building, the very first person to meet me and greet me was the owner. And what a class individual, what a class family. And so I'm very excited for the Maras that the Super Bowl will be played, Super Bowl 48 will be played in New York City. Now, this will be the first time in a number of years, and particularly outdoors, I believe this is a first, that a Super Bowl has been played in potentially winter-like conditions. But the interesting thing about this is the timing of it. Now, granted, the owners were in Dallas to discuss it, and there was a strong likelihood that a decision would come out of their spring meetings with the 48th Super Bowl location being identified. But that was compounded by the fact that the NFL had just lost in the Supreme Court. And it has an absolute effect not only on players, but every professional sport organization in the United States had sided with American Needle. The Players Association, the NFL Players Association, the National Basketball Association, Major League Baseball, and National Hockey League all had filed briefs in support of American Needle. So for the owners to now make their announcement so timely, apropos, that the 48th Super Bowl was going to be in New York City. I think that was to take you, the fans, mind off of what just happened at the Supreme Court. Because this is where this thing is going. Here's where it's going. As I said, in 2015, it's targeted that the NFL will be a $25 billion business. That's because they were going to take everything off of regular TV, go directly to DirecTV, where every one of us, or every one of you, including myself, would have to pay some 50, 60, maybe even 100 bucks per game just to see your game. If you're a Chicago Bear fan, you'd be going to the Chicago Bear TV network to get the game when the Bears are hosting. So that's the bottom line on what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with major league business. And so we're going to dig deep into it. We're going to have a serious discussion about it, and we want to get your thoughts. So I'm asking that you just stand by for a moment. We're going to take a break, go pay some bills, and when we come back, we're going to dig real deep into this thing. And likewise, what's going on with Ben Roethlisberger? That's why we're talking about what in the football. The commissioner now is talking about he's making a decision as to whether Ben can go back to training camp next week. We're talking about a sexual deviant. So we got a number of things we've got to discuss. We're going to get raw and naked right here. Stay with us, Double Time with Double D. We'll be right back.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Are you ready to grow your business? Listen for the Independent Business Owner Show with your coach, Rick Corrado. This entertaining talk radio program will bring you the tools to help increase your business. You'll learn sales success, time management, lead generation, business development, life balance, and much more. Rick Corrado is here to help you take your business to the next level. Listen for the Independent Business Owner Show, heard live every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Each week, take a visit inside the locker room of your favorite sport with Dez Clark, Paul Fresh Clark, and Lester Scudder Davis as they bring you sportsmanlike conduct. As a current player, Dez Clark can bring you inside the sports world like nobody can. His co-hosts represent the fans of the sports world. With both points of view on the table, it becomes an engaging and entertaining program, to say the least. Sportsmanlike Conduct can be heard Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
We all share similar desires to be loved, to be happy, and to feel well. Your Inner Journey is here to support you, inspire you, and expand your knowledge of you. Tune in for new insights, meet our guests, get the inspiration you need to create the life you really want. Your Inner Journey with Penny Calcina is about her inner journey and your inner journey and the things that connect us all. Tune in every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time for Your Inner Journey on Seventh Wave Network.
High school to the pros, we cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
You're tuned in to Double Time with Double D featuring host Dave Duerson. Get in on the action. Call us now at 1-888-346-9144. For Double D, that's 888-346-9144. Or drop an email to DoubleDFans@ddfavor.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Double Time with Double D. I'm your host, Dave Duerson. We're discussing the Supreme Court decision that was just handed down this past Tuesday, American Needle Incorporated versus the National Football League, antitrust law and its implications. And I've got a good man joining me who is certainly one of the premier sports analysts in this country and a good friend of mine from CBS Sports, Mr. Gil Tyree. Gil, it's good to have you on with us. Welcome to Double Time with Double D. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Dave, it's always a pleasure, always a joy to spend some time with you, and I tell you, you know, the you talk about that lawsuit which was settled, you know, in terms of merchandising and what have you, and you know, I just my only wish, and I think a lot of people wish. Can you imagine if that same decision had been rendered during the years of the USFL?
Oh, because, absolutely.
Because clearly, it was proven that the verdict or whatever was decision was reached from a legal standpoint is it is a monopoly, and it does violate antitrust laws, and I think that's what the USFL failed to prove, and that's the reason why the USFL ultimately was disbanded. Well, you know, getting a $3 judgment,
right?
But at the same time, you know, not being able to be absorbed by the NFL and become part of it.
That's right, but the USFL did in fact prove that the NFL was a monopoly.
No question.
But the court awarded them $1.
Correct.
And they got $3 because it was triple damages.
No question.
See,
no question.
But at the end of the day, you know, again, much like this American Needle Incorporated lawsuit and the one that we filed, Reggie White versus the NFL,
mm-hmm.
Times have changed,
mm-hmm.
and some of the. Some of the heads that sit at the Supreme Court have changed, but mm-hmm. this ruling came down 9-0.
And you know, it was also what was interesting is it was announced right before the meeting, the spring meeting in Las Colinas.
Exactly.
Which was strategically
so timely, so apropos.
No, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. But I tell you, Gil, from a fan's perspective, and that's why one of the things I wanted to ask you about. You know, we'll watch boxing, you know, we'll go to Showtime and whatever, and, you know, we're all looking forward to Mayweather Pacquiao, you know, and I'll pay the $100. If it's 150, I'll likely pay it too. But the NFL is looking at making a move in that direction. That's what a major part of this was about. Of course, the real test was about undoing Reggie White versus the NFL so that we would go back to a pre- 1993 free agency system, and so that the NFL could institute across the board. The test was what they did with Reebok with the exclusive license.
Exclusivity, correct.
But what they wanted to do with the players is then set a mark where everything, again, if they could say that all 32 teams are simply one entity, one business, then they just simply would list that every quarterback. The high price is $2.5 million.
Right.
Linebacker, $2 million. The defensive back, you know, $900,000, et cetera. And then they were going to take the Donald Trump model from the USFL, and a guy like Peyton Manning could be paid $50 million to have a character or personality contract with the Colts that the other guys wouldn't. So this whole thing was based in controlling all of that revenue that's about to come through.
Well, here's my thing. Here's my question to you. As we look at this thing, as we move forward, what effect does this have in terms of the ability of the new union chief as he moves forward with labor negotiations as we look on the horizon in terms of what the new contract CBA is going to look like?
Well, it gave Dee Smith the exact same bargaining power that Gene Upshaw had mm-hmm. at the time when the Reggie White versus the NFL decision was going to come down, and Judge Doty suggested to the NFL in the strongest of terms and strongest of words that they needed to reach settlement.
Now, do the owners, in terms of them seeing what happened from a legal standpoint, say, we're going to get back at you and we're going to lock you out?
Well, they could. In fact, that's the poison pill that's at the end of the agreement that was reached between the NFL and the Players Association back in 93.
Mm-hmm.
The poison pill is this nasty thing that says something bad happens to both sides. And
right.
in the case of the players, it's the NFL's ability to lock the players out.
Okay.
The poison pill that the players have is the ability immediately for decertification and Ray Lewis to become the new Reggie White, and they sue again for antitrust. And again, we're talking about an $8 billion business now that's projected to be $25 billion in the year 2015. So in other words, triple.
So it would behoove the owners to to come to the table right now to get something done.
It behooves them to come to the table. That's what the poison pill is all about. It's something nasty that forces us both to the table. Otherwise, it'll bankrupt the NFL.
But, Dave, let's look at history. And, you know, history has always been a guide in terms of the National Football League. We see that being played out with the selection of Super Bowl 48 in New York. And yep. I tell people all the time it's interesting because the opinion makers and the sports talkers and what have you talk about warm weather and all of that stuff. But pre-Super Bowl, all the, you know, the league championship game was played in cold weather, okay? And nobody had a problem with it then. And here's another thing, and this is something I want to throw out at you. As we move forward in this, it would seem to me that the bargaining chip or the reward for getting a brand-new stadium is to get a Super Bowl. And of all the major markets that's still not in play in terms of having a Super Bowl, L.A. is the last bastion. And where was the first Super Bowl played? In L.A.
Right.
So if L.A. would get a new stadium, if they get a stadium deal and or they do not are able to get a deal with a team that, say, is looking to move, say a Minnesota or a Jacksonville, or possibly if the situation here in Atlanta becomes tenuous at best because they've just said that they wanted a brand-new stadium and that doesn't work out and there's, you know, there's anti-feelings about that. If they decide to move to L.A. and they're given a new stadium, suppose that doesn't occur, wouldn't it behoove the NFL to have a stadium built and the Super Bowl be permanently be put in Los Angeles as a compromise as we move forward in years to come?
Well, I tell you what, I think New Orleans is absolutely the perfect city for
Super Bowl
as opposed to Los Angeles and for all the right reasons, and particularly in light of everything that's happening now, you know, it's like Katrina 2 with this oil leak. New Orleans
is a perfect spot because they know how to deal with it.
Permanent city.
Right.
Los Angeles, for what it's worth, Gil, has not shown an allegiance to supporting the National Football League. There's just too many distractions out there. You've got NBA, you've got Major League Baseball, you've got hockey, you've got Hollywood.
You got college football, you got Hollywood. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and it's Hollywood that is that additional distraction that for whatever reason has pulled away a lot of support that otherwise would have existed in the Los Angeles County area,
right,
or Orange County for an NFL team. But as I understand it, there is major construction that's already underway, or at least the permits have been approved for the building of a major stadium in Los Angeles.
Is that the Roski Group?
I believe that is correct. It's safe to say that with the next expansion, an NFL team will end up in Los Angeles.
How do you feel about ultimately what we're seeing with the, which is going to be probably included in the next CBA, an 18-game regular season with less emphasis placed on the preseason?
Well, the players, of course, are going to love it because, you know, they're tired of getting that per diem anyway.
Right.
You shorten, it's literally it's the same number of games. But
do you move into February now? Because you're going into, you know, you've basically cleared January already. You've had two Super Bowls in the month of February.
Right.
And even with the off weeks that would have to, you know, incur, I think it would be two off weeks. You're going to push now your season into February. Are you trying to affect the NBA All-Star Game? Are you trying to get into a little bit of a competition with Major League Baseball as they start this spring training, what have you? You want to keep your interest, and then you're up against NASCAR too because the Daytona 500 is in February.
Right. Well, as far as the NFL is concerned, there's no competition anyway.
Okay.
But actually, they'd be moving in the other direction, Gil. They would be reducing the preseason, which right now is six weeks.
So you go, what, 2 weeks? So that means you put more emphasis on your OTAs.
Exactly.
What you're doing now.
That's exactly it.
Preparation.
As we've already seen, the OTAs, which are supposed to be voluntary, are mandatory.
Voluntary/mandatory. You know, that was your former defensive coordinator, Buddy Ryan, who became the head and your head coach. You know, talking about that in terms of, you know, they were not, quote unquote, they were not voluntary. They were mandatory, and they wanted to see you there.
I want to
ask you, you know, one question before I let you go, Dave. Your thoughts this week about the Urlacher-Gale Sayers feud. and how that plays out in the Bears family, and ultimately how that played out locally but also nationally, and what are the ramifications of that?
Well, first and foremost, we'll let you give the background to our listeners as to what occurred.
Well, you had Gale Sayers, who's a Hall of Famer, one of the best running backs ever in the history of the National Football League, a career that was cut short because of knee injuries, but clearly ahead of his time in terms of how he attacked and how he ran between tackles, questioning the direction in terms of the commitment of the head coach in Lovie Smith, and also the commitment of the new quarterback, Cutler, in addition to what's been going on in terms of the team and where they are, and their sense of history and their passion and what have you. And then you had Brian Urlacher, who is the modern day in terms of popularity in terms of the Chicago Bears, and really a guy who's been frustrated because he, you know, sat out last year because of the torn ACL. And you had a battle of words, and there were some things said in the heat of battle, and Urlacher told Gale Sayers to shut up, and you know, he disrespected him in some way and said, listen, you haven't won anything, and you know, you need to keep your mouth shut and you need to be positive. And then on the other side, you had Sayers, who got a lot of support from ex-Bears and icons, you know, like Dick Butkus and Mike Ditka.
Right.
And it escalated, and I wanted to hear, because you're one of you're part of the most celebrated team in Bears history and celebrated player, you know, clearly revered in Chicagoland and what have you, great player at Notre Dame and had an illustrious career in the National Football League. I wanted to get your take on it because, you know, that's unheard of. I mean, when you have a family like that going against each other in terms of the philosophy and where they're going, clearly
right. –
You know, Lovie Smith has not been one who's endeared himself in the Bears community, and the McCaskey family has struggled with that, I'm sure, in terms of, you know, feeling out where they wanted to go in the future. And I think that's why Mike Martz was brought aboard.
Yeah. Well, I wanted you to share your perspective on it as opposed to me giving the history of it, because mine would have been twisted. You know, my opinion and even how I would have laid out the facts would have been skewed by the fact that I'm a Chicago Bear. So I was trying to give the most honest approach to getting the facts
to give the lay of the land and background on it.
Right, so that we can get to the truth.
Okay.
That's what I tell people all the time. I said, you know, facts change, but the truth never does.
No question.
And so in this instance, I wanted Gil Tyree, a great, great sports fan, a true historian as it pertains to the game itself, but also a sports analyst and a very decorated sports analyst, to give us his perspective, from the perspective of the total fan.
Right.
Now, let me just give you some quick history. I'm gonna go offline on this one, and I'm gonna come right back. When I was playing for Notre Dame, played for Dan Devine for 2 years. We played for national championship.
Loved by Dan Devine, I may add, too. One of the great coaches, and also a great gentleman.
Absolutely. In fact,
one of my favorites of all time.
God bless his spirit.
His
last book, I was one of four individuals who were part of the afterword, who wrote part of the afterword, along with Lou Holtz. And so he's coach of someone that I dearly miss. But we played for a national championship my sophomore year in Georgia. For the Sugar Bowl, in New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl against
right.
Georgia, Herschel Walker.
Herschel, exactly.
We ended up losing that game and returned 19 starters the next year. We were told just before kickoff, as we left the hotel and boarded our buses to go to the Superdome, that would be Coach Devine's last game. And on the buses, we heard from the guys from Cincinnati Moeller that they already knew who the next coach was, that it was Jerry Faust. And so we played flat. Long story short, though, we came with 19 starters back, Gil, the following year in 1981, and ended up going 5-6. And then my senior year, which I was a captain, we were 6-4-1. And so upon being drafted by the Bears, there was an article. I was interviewed by the Chicago Sun-Times, and I was asked what it was like to play Notre Dame football and, you know, what were my expectations for the program going forward. And I commented that I felt sorry for the current group of guys who were coming into Notre Dame, who had not played for Dan Devine and who were now being recruited by Jerry Faust. In fact, those two underclass groups, the freshmen and sophomores that I had played with as a captain under Faust, that they would not know what it was like to play true Notre Dame football. It was not an attack against Jerry Faust as much as it was that there was a totally different philosophy that was sweeping through the campus, and that the tradition and everything that we held true that made Notre Dame football special, a lot of that had been lost. And quite frankly, since Coach Devine, I think that luster has only been recaptured one other time, and that was under Lou Holtz. Hmm. I got excommunicated. I was excommunicated for 4 years. And so then everything I said basically came true, and they brought me back as Notre Dame Man of the Year and placed me on an advisory board. And good times came after that. The same holds true in regards to what's going on in Chicago. Gale Sayers had every right, absolutely every right, to make his comment to Brian Urlacher, and more importantly, not to Brian Urlacher, but to the question of the state of the current Bears.
Right.
And then, in like said, for Mike Ditka and Dick Butkus to come to his aid, I think was most appropriate. And I will chime in on that, too. And I know Mike Singletary and everybody else that I've played with.
It's also very revealing as well.
That's the point.
You know, and
much like with Notre Dame, there are certain traditions that make the Chicago Bears the Chicago Bears. If you played the Bears, the one thing you knew for certain, even if the Bears lost, was that the opponent got beat up, physically got beat up, Gil, and that they were not going to play very well the following week. In fact, the following week it would bode well for whomever the Bears' opponent was this week. That let's say it was the Packers this week. When the Packers would play against the Saints next week, that would bode very well for the Saints because the Packers were going to be pretty well beat up. But that's not true today. And in fact, over the last 10 years or so, the Packers have in fact looked more forward to playing the Minnesota Vikings than the Chicago Bears, and that is almost sacrilegious.
Right.
And so those are the things that are coming into play, and the emotions that are beginning to emit out of a Gale Sayers, who's a very quiet individual, and certainly, you know, for Ditka and Butkus to come to his defense says a great deal.
Oh, no question.
And I think likewise that Gale is expressing what the Chicago-based fans are feeling as well.
Mm-hmm. He's almost like he's a mouthpiece, and you're right. There are only certain icons. You know, if you had to do a Mount Rushmore of Chicago Bears, clearly Gale Sayers would be one. Dick Butkus would be another one. Mike Ditka would be one, and Walter Payton.
That's right.
And you know, you and I would say Singletary to a degree too. But outside of that, because you know the quote unquote monsters in Midway. What Chicago means in terms of George Halas, what it means in terms of now the McCaskey family. And as you talked about and eloquently brought this out in your open, about the Mara families, there are only a few first families in the National Football League.
That's right.
The Maras are one of them, the McCaskeys, the Halases, the Bidwells in Arizona are another one. The Robbies, when the Robbies were part of ownerships with the Miami Dolphins. And I also would include the Brown family. First in Cleveland and now in Cincinnati. And then you have, of course, the Rooneys in Pittsburgh. But and the Ford family in Detroit. But outside of that, that's pretty much it, correct?
That you hit it on the head. And so with the Bears being one of those very first teams, and in fact the original National Football League team, it bodes well, I think, that at this point in the history of the Chicago Bears that the icons are coming back and saying, hey, we have an expectation
right.
that you guys are going to play at the highest level.
And that's a good thing.
And represent,
that's a good
and represent
thing,
the
Dave.
Colors well.
And I would like to hear, and I mean this, and this is no, you know, pushing you or propping you up. I would like to hear Dave Duerson. You are an integral part, and I'm saying this. You're not saying it. It's coming from me. And it comes from me. I'm not biased about this. I care deeply about you. You get it. You're a wonderful ambassador for the National Football League. I think people do not understand what you're made of and the ilk that you have in terms of your knowledge, and you're the one of the most intelligent people that I've ever been around. But I'd like to get I would like to hear you speak out. It's like you talked about. It's a passion. It's an expectation of Bear football, and I applaud Gale Sayers for saying what he said. I wish he would say it for the University of Kansas, where he went to school.
Yeah, well,
you know, I'd like to hear that.
Well, you know, there, absolutely, I hear you. Well, I appreciate those kudos you gave me, Gil. And you know, as you know, I'm one of those warriors, man. I will speak out for that which I believe. And
well, you've
I'm
always
not afraid
been right.
To, I'm not afraid to stand up for the little guy, but in this particular one where we're talking about the Bears, I'm going to let those other icons handle it. Because I'm involved, you know, as you know, on this Players Association side, so I'm always in the fight.
Right.
And, in fact, I even had to do battle against my former head coach, Mike Dicker, a couple of years ago at the U.S. Senate. So I'm, for whatever reason, I'm always out front. I'm very happy to be in the background on this one, let these guys take it. And I just simply say, hey, to what Gale Sayers and Mike Dicker and Dick Butkus said, ditto.
I've always said this about Dave Dewis, and he does everything well. You know, you could be a broadcaster, you could be a politician, you could be anything you want, you can be because you get it. You know,
well,
you really, really do. And
it's an honor
to be, you know, part of you and part of your company, and it's an honor to be on your radio show, you know, whenever I can and whenever I'm asked.
I appreciate it. And hey, I'm looking forward to joining you in a matter of, what, 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah.
We're going to go to Haiti and see if we can make a difference.
Well, the Good Samaritan Project of Haiti, the wonderful people who are trying to rebuild their country. And, you know, Dave, it's really unfortunate that, you know, that country has been ravaged by so much over a period of time. It's a wonderful country with wonderful people.
Yes.
But even more, and I've said this to many times, it may be the greatest piece of land in this hemisphere on earth, and it needs to be, and its people need to be afforded the right to live a good life, and you know, it's an honor to be a part of the Good Samaritan Project of Haiti, and also to bring you aboard, because they definitely need help, and I look forward to going down to Port-au-Prince and spending some time with the great people down there.
Okay, buddy.
All right,
man. Love you to death.
Okay.
Appreciate you being on, and we'll talk again real soon. Okay.
Take care now.
All right, thanks, Gil. We're not going to take a break right now. In fact, I've got two additional people online. Of course, we've got our director of sports for Voice America Radio, Brother Ray Ellis, joining us, who was great safety with the Philadelphia Eagles and along with the Cleveland Browns, and he hails from the Ohio State University. And then, of course, we have one of our regular callers who hails from the University of Wisconsin. And so we have these Big Ten wars that go on. So to Ray and Kim, welcome to Double Time with Double D. It's good to have you guys with us.
Always a pleasure, Dave. And I just wanted to chime in, because as I listened to Gil talk about the comments, of course, that were made by Gale Sayers, I'm sure there was a question that was asked, and Gale was simply responding to the question. But I've always felt, and it's one reason why here at Voice America Sports, what I've always done and attempted to do was to have what I call subject matter experts as a part of this sports network.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is those people have actually spent time on that field and know what it's like to commit your life to a sport and to be successful at it. And like you, I want to commend you for the success that you've had on the field as well as what you've had off the field. But I wanted to do that for the simple reason is I wanted people to enjoy the opinions of those subject matter experts because they played the game.
Yeah.
And so therefore it brings more credibility to the network and to the show when you have somebody who's actually played the game. You don't want to have a figurehead to speak and give his opinion based upon the fact that he doesn't want to lose credibility with whomever the comments are geared towards. So in this particular case with Urlacher, I mean, come on, he's got to get over it. You know, Gale is somebody who played the game at the highest level. The man is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And many times when we're asked to give our opinion, now we may have a certain passion for our team, but it's his expert opinion that they're asking for. And Gale is simply expressing the fact that they're not giving enough, they're not doing enough, they're certainly not living up to the tradition of the Chicago Bears, and you talked about the way, you know, when you guys would play a game, if you won or if you lost, it was a very physical game, and people would have known that they had just played the Chicago Bears.
That's
and
right.
I think that's what Gail's looking for. Gail's looking for, you know, what most people look for in a good, hard-fought football game, and just let's win more than what we lose, and let's get back to, you know, championship football.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, you mentioned about your experience at Notre Dame. There are certain traditions and certain expectations at certain programs where that is the norm. You know, that's what everybody expects.
Exactly, and that's why I wanted to bring you in to that part of the discussion, because much like Notre Dame, Woody Hayes created a tradition at Ohio State. That still permeates today. Am I right about it?
You are so right about it, Dave. And like you, I was a part of a transition, and I remember being on the plane when Woody told us, you know, he would no longer be our coach next year, you know, because he had just been fired after we lost the Gator Bowl. And, of course, everybody knows about the punch, but it wasn't about the punch. It was all about the passion that Woody had for this game. This game was his life. And even so, you talk about what happens as the program is taken over, you know, sometimes these men become so iconic that they are the program.
Yeah.
You know, and Woody Hayes is Ohio State football. I know Coach Tressel's done a good job there, and probably will go down as one of the winningest football coaches, but that still is Woody Hayes football at Ohio State, and that type of tradition that you had in Notre Dame, and you mentioned with the Chicago Bears and the House family and what they built and all the other great teams in the NFL. If I could, I would like to throw in there, because he finally got his. And I know all those Browns fans out there will hate him. Hate me for saying this probably too. Throw me in there with him. But I think the Modell family, you know, yeah, deserves to be in the conversation, because he, of course, took over the team when I think the Browns went to Cincinnati, you know. But, you know, it was a long, hard fought for him. He was a modern day. He became a modern day owner who made a business decision to move the team to Baltimore. And of course, they since have won a Super Bowl, which the Browns are one of the teams, the original teams that have never won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, that's just great to hear. You know, Gil to make those kind of comments and to bring those things out. And I think the younger players have to understand that again, there are shoes that they have yet to walk in, but they too one day will be granted a microphone to speak their opinions,
right,
and they will only become a credible, you know, sports commentator if they give an honest opinion. You can't worry about who you play for; you got to give your honest opinion.
Absolutely, and again, you know, that's what makes this show special, I believe, as when we went about developing Double Time with Double D. You know, when you and I sat down and we talked, I said, hey, this will not be Football 101.
I remember that. I do remember that.
We're going to bring you the butt-naked truth. We're going to bring it to you raw and uncut. We'll keep it as clean as we can. But, you know, we do allow for emotions to play a part from time to time. But it's just been the nature of the way things have gone this particular offseason in particular, that there are just a number of things that just simply piss you off. But I'm excited that you've given me this platform, Ray, and I love the you know, the exchanges that we continue to have, and that you and some of our callers get into. So we're going to bring Kim into this conversation right away too, because I want to shift gears. And Kim is an attorney. She brings legal expertise to a number of things. She's also, more importantly, she's a football fan. She's a Bear fan and she's a Cowboy fan. That to me. Exactly. I mean,
both in the NFC. She can't be both. She's got to be one or the other. They're both in the NFC.
I can't stand the Cowboys. Never could. It could be my best friends, Everson Wall.
And the Giants fan and the Cowboys fan, too.
So welcome to the show, Kim. It's good to have you.
Thank you. Before I make my first comment, I wanted to say, to add on to the praises that you were receiving earlier by Gil, because especially in this time within the past few weeks, the football players have come under a number of scrutinies. A lot of players are running afoul right now. And not only haven't you done that, you have completed your education and represented the NFL well. So I'd like to give you kudos on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
But Gil asked my first question, which was how does it affect the negotiations? But one of the things I wanted to point out about the antitrust issue and winning that ruling with the Supreme Court is that not only does it allow people have to understand that the ruling just allows for the case now to go back to the lower court and be heard on the merits.
Right.
The owners were actually trying to circumvent the even hearing the case. So now, like you said, it would behoove the owners to come back to the table now that they know that they are not going to get the exemption that the baseball industry received, and to come to the table with some type of negotiations, because people don't understand that had they gotten that exemption, it not only included a lot of money. I know you threw out the number $8 billion, and for the layperson, $8 billion to them is just a lot of money. But included in that $8 billion would be them being able to set and control prices for hot dogs,
exactly.
Jerseys, caps.
Exactly. Yes.
People, the NFL players' likenesses, video games. I mean, it would be huge, especially in the future. So it allows that to be included into your negotiation.
Exactly. In fact, that's why it was going to go from $8 billion to $25 billion over the next 5 years. It was going to triple in revenue over 5 years simply based on the fact that the NFL would have absolute control. That's
absolutely.
Of the players and the fans.
And the fans,
and of TV. In other words, obviously, there's major contracts that are paid right now by, ESPN, ABC, NBC, CBS, et cetera, Fox. But that number is still going to skyrocket because more and more of the NFL games are moving towards pay-per-view. And the Super Bowl very quickly will be there, and likely when the Super Bowl is played in New York for Super Bowl 48, that will, in fact, be the case. But Kim, let me ask you, also, as it pertains to this Supreme Court ruling, I thought it very interesting because when we originally sued for free agency in Minneapolis, the players lost. And we lost because although we were not negotiating with the owners, we still, in fact, had a collective bargaining unit. And so what was interesting was that a strong dissenting opinion, in other words, it wasn't a 9-0 vote, much like it was at the Supreme Court on this particular decision, American Eagle versus the NFL. There were dissenting judges who voted in favor of the players when we lost way back in, I believe it was 89 or 90. And the dissenting opinion was written so strong, it gave us the roadmap, which was to decertify and then file our lawsuits. Actually, in fact, it would have been back in 87, 88 that we actually had lost and were given a dissenting opinion. The fact that this was a 9-0 decision at the Supreme Court, there is no dissenting opinion. So, in other words, there's no roadmap, if you will, for the NFL to circumvent this antitrust law exemption. So wouldn't it behoove the owners to simply cut their deal with American Needle and stop the bleeding?
It would. And what they need to also realize, and I know they're sitting there going, well, on if they go back to court and shore up this battle again, that the company has an opportunity to lose. But what they need to understand is a lot of things is timing and the makeup of your court.
Yes.
Right now, big business is getting hammered because of their laissez-faire practices and their actual arrogance that they get to do whatever it is they want to do and have been in positions to actually do that.
Yeah.
Earlier today, Barack Obama was on television with regard to this BP and this oil spill and had to make it, very clear that, the organizations that were set up to monitor offshore drilling were basically over the last 10 years given a free rein to do whatever they wanted to because they were allowed to get permits. if no study had come up within 30 days. And you cannot do a study on offshore drilling in 30 days. Mm-hmm. So basically anybody who had said they wanted to drill did. And they said because of those practices, we're in the situation we are now. And that becomes the same thing with this decision. Back when in the 89, when you all had your initial lawsuit, what you had was a court of people who wanted big business to be given free rein to do whatever it was they wanted to do, and so that business could continue and the rich could enjoy the fruits of everybody's labor without passing those fruits down to those who were, you know, intricately involved in making those fruits possible.
Right.
And now you have a court that is, although everybody is talking about how well-educated they are and Harvard-based and what have you, and that's not indicative of America, well, you need to have a court that is well-versed in the law. And these people are more sympathetic and have a better understanding of and willing to rule on how America actually works and what is actually true and fair, not just for the rich and wealthy, but for everybody. And so where the Major League Baseball was given an exemption, they are not sending out the signal that just because you bring the lawsuit, you too will be given one. And
right.
I think the NFL counted on that and are extremely disappointed that they didn't get it.
Well, I appreciate that perspective because clearly, I mean, the NFL asked one question, and that was for the Supreme Court to rule that they, the NFL, in fact, were above the law. That's a great time for us to segue with both you and Ray. Speaking in terms of above the law, we've been having this Ben Roethlisberger conversation for like about 6 or so weeks, and you know, and the commissioner made a shift just before the draft when he wasn't supposed to weigh in until after the draft on Ben Roethlisberger. He decided to weigh in just before the draft, which brought additional viewers to the draft for the 3-day TV show and program that the NFL draft has come to be. Now we've got the same thing happening. You know, again, they lose this court case at the Supreme Court. So then they immediately announce that Super Bowl 48 is going to be going to New York, the New York, New Jersey area. And then immediately, too, the commissioner says, oh, and by the way, I'm going to weigh in as to what I'm going to do with Ben Roethlisberger next week as to whether I'm going to allow him back to training camp. Wherefore, all the other guys, again, the Michael Vicks, the Pac-Man Joneses, et cetera, when a suspension was handed down and games would not be allowed over the course of the regular season, that individual could not be anywhere near a football field. Plaxico Burress, et cetera. So I'm interested to get both of your perspectives as to Roger Goodell's move that I'm all but certain is going to allow Ben Roethlisberger back to practice. Isn't this a guy, too, who, in terms of Ben Roethlisberger, has operated, quote-unquote, above the law? And the commissioner in his post, Kim, as you said, there were judges at one time that wanted big business. Isn't Roger Goodell sitting in that same seat about to allow the ridiculous to occur?
In my opinion, he is. And if I were any of those players who had been suspended in recent years and not given the let me rephrase that. If Roger Goodell turns around and for any reason allows Ben Roethlisberger back on the field within the short and prejudicial, what I can only see is prejudicial
yes.
Aspect of this ruling, I would be one of players suing Roger Goodell.
Absolutely.
Because it would infuriate me, and I'm infuriated just thinking about it. If you're going to hand down a ruling, especially when it's already unfairly biased and clearly seen as biased,
absolutely.
The least you can do is stand by that ruling. But if you turn around and then give preferential treatment to Ben Roethlisberger, I would have to sue you. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I think all of those individuals who, from Michael Vick from years ago to Plaxico Burress now, and to keep in perspective with Kevin Ellison, who just got arrested, who
yes.
he is going to have to rule on,
yes.
all of them should get together and do a class action against him if, in fact, he changes his mind.
I think we're headed there, Ray. Let me get your opinion on that too.
Well, you know, Dave, I think there's no doubt about it. I think that his actions, when it as it pertained to the other players, was quick, was swift, and very harsh. And anything that is inconsistent with what he's done in the past as it relates to Ben Roethlisberger, then he needs to feel the wrath of whatever could possibly happen to him, because it's not fair. It's obvious to people, and, I mean, things are so polarized in this country. It's black and it's white, and we understand that. It shouldn't always be like that, but there are so many people, when these things seem to surface, that becomes a major issue. In this particular case, for us, you know, and they always say that many times black men will want to, you know, play the race card. It's just obvious to us. It's right there in our face. And I think Roger, you know, he feels it. He certainly feels the heat. He's aware of it. I mean, there are plenty of platforms like this one and others. It's being discussed. There are blogs all over, and many people have expressed their opinions. It has to happen. You know, the game can live without anybody. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
So he should handle his business in a very professional way and be consistent. And you know, Ben will just have to suffer the consequences. And I agree with Kim. I agree with you. I think you feel the same way, too. Ben should be away from the team. He should not be on the premises until his suspension has lapsed, and then he should be back.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, much like our conversation with Gil Tyree talking about Gale Sayers and his comments in regards to tradition, we talked about Notre Dame and tradition. We talked about Ohio State and tradition. And, of course, we know the Wisconsin Badgers, too, have tradition. The National Football League has tradition.
Yes.
And supposedly, the protecting the integrity of the game means something. And I think that in lieu of the decisions that Roger Goodell has made as it pertains to Ben Roethlisberger, that he is making a comedy of this thing. And so I would challenge all of our NFL brethren who are listening to Voice America Sports, and particularly listening to us now, Double Time with Double D, for all of us to come together in concert and challenge the commissioner in regards to the suspension that he has handed down to Ben Roethlisberger. Six games could be reduced to four with quote-unquote good conduct, but that he is now about to address the issue of whether Ben will be allowed to come back and practice. The fact that the commissioner didn't simply say, no, the decision has been handed down and it is what it is, it leads all of us to understand that the commissioner is leaning towards allowing Ben Roethlisberger back on the field. I want to thank all my guests for calling in, Gil Tyree of CBS Sports. I want to thank Ray Ellis, our director of sports there at Voice America Sports Radio. We also want to thank Kim, our legal analyst, who is a regular supporter of Double Time with Double D. And I want to thank you, the listening audience, because without you, there is no Double Time with Double D. So God bless you all. We look forward to having this conversation again next week, and we'll take it to the next level. Until then, God bless you. We'll talk real soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for joining Dave Duerson for Double Time with Double D. We'll be back again next Thursday at 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, for another look inside the game, words of inspiration, and more on the Voice America Sports Channel. Game's on again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.